Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Delegation of the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, is in Iran's capital, Tehran, to discuss the so-called outstanding issues, including the agency's probe. This visit came when just one day earlier, Iran's nuclear agency chief, Islami, said the country's capacity to enrich uranium has more than doubled in its entire history, up to 60%, and that's up from 3.67% allowed under the nuclear deal. Now, why would Iran make that announcement now, and what will be the reaction of the IAEA, along with the U.S. and the EU, for that matter? Can't forget Israel either. Those are some of the key questions we'll be asking in this edition of The Spotlight. First, let me introduce our guests. Fuad Izzadi, professor at the University of Tehran, joins us from Tehran. Also joining us is Yusuf Azizi, international affairs expert, who joins us from Washington, D.C. Welcome to you both. Fuad Izzadi, I'll first start with you. Welcome to the program. Taking a look at the IAEA statement on this visit, it has said it's at the invitation of Iran, and it's a technical team that's going to be visiting, that's visiting Tehran. Basically, taking a look at just the invitation itself, given the fact that Iran has extended that invitation, doesn't that show Iran's goodwill and gesture and willingness to actually cooperate with the agency after everything that it's been through? And we're going to discuss some of that. In order to, as Mr. Islami said, to straighten out any ambiguities or questions that the IAEA may have.
You know, this is actually going beyond what we just described. We know that IAEA director coordinates his statements and his actions with the Israeli entity. He visited Israel a few months ago. He is in contact with Israeli officials constantly. He basically repeats what he hears from the Israelis. And for Iran to be working with this particular individual is going much beyond normal concessions that the country would generally give. And it has been the decision of Iranian officials to engage in these type of contacts to make sure that no one could accuse Iran of not cooperating with IAEA, even with this director of IAEA. So Iran is going beyond any reasonable and logical action. As you know, Iran is inspected more than any other country in the world. And sooner or later, I think Iranian officials will get tired of this type of behavior that we see from IAEA. And I think the window of opportunity that IAEA has to continue to work with Iran is not very long.
Okay, so that's a key way of putting it towards the end there that I'd like to ask you, Yusuf Azizi, as to when is Iran going to get tired? I mean, we're looking at this invitation that was extended by Iran coming on the heels of, in a matter of 6 months, two resolutions were executed against Iran by the Board of Governors of the IAEA, given the fact, of course, the country behind it was the U.S. mainly. But even after that, Iran still said, okay, let's give the IAEA an invitation to come to Iran in order to, again, clear up any questions or ambiguities. But the key question here being, when will Iran get tired, do you think?
So as we know, the Iran's precondition to revive the JCPOA, one of the preconditions is to resolve this allegation against Iran's nuclear program. There is three cases or documents against Iran that recently adopted by some members like Israel's government against Iran. But You know, I believe that never ever in the near future, the Iran and the IAEA will finish their cooperation, because as long as Iran is part of the NPT, Iran do whatever it can under the NPT. So going beyond or even in the 60% enrichment of uranium, it's not against the NPT. So Iran is still cooperate with IAEA, and we know that also European countries, they agreed about 3 months ago in August that, okay, these three documents against Iran allegations should be resolved before the whole JCPOA revived and all of the countries go back to the their obligations. But again, the United States put some issues against these conditions that all of the parties agreed on that. So my understanding is that Iran and the IAEA would, you know, cooperate in a level that it's not going to finish everything, because the finishing everything is mean that Iran go out of the NPT and the European countries, you know, put them, put end at the for the JCPOA and all of the sanctions, the UN sanctions, go back to the Iran. So I think nobody's, no parties would like to go to that kind of situation. It is not in the benefit of either parties. And this kind of negotiation, this kind of talking to resolve these issues is necessary for all sides. We don't know if the United States, after the election, the Congress election, the midterm election in the United States last November, if the United States is now going to resolve these little and small phrases, disagreement phrases in the final reviving agreement, because we know that right now and in the next 2 or 3 months, the Biden administration has open-handed to revive the JCPOA. If they are not going and they are not deciding very diligently to revive the JCPOA, again, the United States domestic policy go to the loop of the presidential election and the primary election of the U.S. president in 2024, and the, again, the Biden administration cannot revive the JCPOA.
All right, let's talk about what happened a day earlier, Fuad Azadi, and that was a major announcement that Iran made, where the Iran's nuclear agency chief said the country's capacity, from what I'm reading, to enrich uranium has more than doubled in its entire history, of which the enrichment has reached the level of 60%. Of course, that's something that was due not to be in the deal itself, but because the U.S. pulled out of it. So Iran did have the right to do what it has done. Why do you think Iran decided to make that announcement one day before the IAEA arrived in the capital, Tehran?
You know, Iran was following JCPOA 1 year, more than 1 year after United States left the agreement. So I think if it wasn't for Iran, we would not have any JCPOA. And the Biden administration has been in office for almost 2 years. And Biden could return to the agreement on the first day of his presidency, the same way he returned to the Paris Climate Accords on his first day of presidency. He could just nullify Trump's executive order. The new presidents get to do that in the United States if they want to. And he didn't. He wanted to drag his feet and keep talking, keep demanding new things. And the end result is that a lot of Iranian leaders are realizing that just waiting for the United States on these issues is not in the national interest of Iran. Iran is a member of NPT, and I'm sure you have read the text. There is no place in NPT that tells you to what percentage you can enrich. It doesn't have the number 60% or 3% or 90%. Countries are allowed to enrich uranium for peaceful purposes to any degree of enrichment that they want. So Iran could do 90% or 95% or 99%. There are no limitations on that in NPT. You know, people who wrote the non-proliferation treaty were experts in nuclear physics, at least some of them were, and they could put that limitation in the text. They decided not to do that, and the end result is that countries like Iran will use whatever enriched uranium they need to have as members of NPT.
Okay. Well, let's talk about this point, but in a different way, if we can, Yusuf Azizi. And I'd like to ask you what has been said before. It's actually a repeated point, but it is worth discussing, that this whole thing is a manufactured crisis, that this is not about Iran's civilian nuclear program or the fact that the statements or the posturing or the views out there were either coming from the U.S. or Israel or any of their allies, that Iran may be after the nuclear bomb or is after the nuclear bomb or weaponization of the nuclear program. That is just all posturing in a sense, and is put out there because they know that Iran's leader has issued a fatwa, at least that's what is known, that it would never pursue that path. So given that premise, what are the points of friction that hasn't been able to work out, if that's even possible to ask a question like that, in order for you to explain it to us?
Yeah, as you said, if it is it was only the Iran nuclear program, it should be resolved in 2003 when the Western countries engaged with Khatami administration and especially the three European countries, Germany, France, and England, has discussed and negotiated and reached to agreement three times with Iranian administration. But again, the Bush administration at that time, they said that, okay, there is no zero enrichment in Iran. There is some crazy policy of United States. So if it is just the Iran nuclear program, it should be resolved a long time ago. But as you said, I believe that when Iranian announced this progress in their enrichment and in their nuclear capability, it is because that the Western countries right now, especially the United States, sees the negotiation, especially from the Iranian side, as the weaker point, because they see that the unrest, the recent unrest in Iran, weakened the Iranian position on the table. On the other hand, we know that since September, August, when the world knows that the negotiation goes after the United States election in November, each party tried to build some strategic cards to, you know, negotiate later on the table. They didn't go just to, you know, talk to the Capitol and waste the time. So from the American perspective, I think they find out, or they believe, or they expected that Iranian comes to the negotiation table with the weaker position because of the unrest. And on the other side, the Iranian try to bring the 60% to at Fordo and also use the most advanced centrifuge they built on. So they try to make some strategic card to play on later on the negotiation table. This is my understanding that both sides, all sides, wanted to revive the JCPOA. But the elements in the revival agreement is very important, and we are maybe in the last phases of the reviving this agreement.
Fuad, I was trying to come up with a statement that Iran's leader actually made regarding the riots, as we call it, inside Iran. I believe one of the things that he did say, and I can't paraphrase him, I mean, I can't quote him exactly, so I'm going to have to paraphrase, is the fact that he said that one of the reasons that these riots have occurred and this whole scenario is being played out inside of Iran is because the U.S. wanted to get concessions from Iran that it wasn't getting when the sanction removal talks were happening, and therefore this was one of their strategies in order for Iran to come to the table and therefore have a weaker hand. They're associating, they call it the protest, we call it riots, they're associating that with getting nuclear concessions. Is that something that is actually happening, do you think?
Well, let me first say that they call, they use the word protesters or protests. Press TV says they're rioting, they're riots. And I think Press TV is too soft, actually. These are vigilantes, criminals that are killing police officers. when you have riots, generally you don't have people killing police officers. You have criminals killing police officers. So calling these people protesters is actually insulting the people who are actually protesting. Protesters don't kill police officers. Rioters don't kill police officers. Criminals kill police officers. Vigilantes kill police officers. You know, the people, a couple of them have been executed. The people who are engaging in these type of activities would not be tolerated in any country. That is what Iran is doing. That's the first point. The second point, yes.
Well noted.
The United States is trying to use what's going on in Iran as a way of pressuring the Iranian government for more concessions. They are failing. The Iranian government is not going to negotiate in this manner under pressure. And what is actually beneficial to a lot of people in Iran is seeing what the West is all about. The hatred that they have towards Muslim women, if they observe the hijab, they are going to be called names in countries like France. They're going to face difficulties in a good number of Western countries. They want to use this issue to put pressure on the Iranian government. And people realize what this is all about. So overall, I think that strategy is failing miserably. And the fact that Iran started an increased level of nuclear activity yesterday is a sign for that statement.
Okay. I just happened to glance over at the time. We just got a few minutes left here. So, Yusuf Azizi, I think one of the things that I need to ask you are the issue of sanctions. Now, it's interesting that the U.S. Special Representative assigned to Iran's case has said that Iran is the one that has walked back and rejected the deal on more than one occasion. You have to ask them why that has happened. But it's interesting how it says, this is, again, something that I'm quoting from him, what we were prepared to do was to lift those sanctions that were supposed to be lifted under the JCPOA and which had been put back into effect by the Trump administration. And he also says sanctions are not the answer. If he says that, then why is it that there hasn't been an agreement on the sanctions, which Iran says purely and simply that it needs to be lifted?
Yeah, as you know, the Iranian position is that we are going to back to the 2015 JCPOA, not one word less or more. United States tell the same, but it's a little bit different here, and it is because of the different interpretation from both sides. The United States put more sanction as entities and people and persons and everything in Iran, and also it shows that the next administration could easily come out again, and there is no guarantee for United States politics and domestic politics and United States Constitution. There is no guarantee here that the United States want to abide by the, any agreement, any international agreement, especially against countries like Iran or mid-level power in the world. So the Iranians said this time, if we revive the JCPOA, there is no countries or major companies to come and invest Iran. It is just only selling some hundred thousand more oil for a limited time. And it is not worth it. It is not worth it that we spend all of this money and efforts to, circumvent the sanction or build on our nuclear power, nuclear energy. And again, because there's no guarantee, because of 1 year or 2 year or maybe 6 months, we just destroy everything. Who is going to pay this, consumption? So there are many arguments here. And I think after this unrest and putting all of these sanctions about the human rights, terrorism, everything else, so we know that if there is a revival on JCPOA, uh-huh. there should be a limited amount of benefits very, very limited amount of benefit in the time and scope of benefit, economic benefits for Iran.
Well, let's have your take on that, Fuadizade, in terms of the way that the sanctions have impacted the economy, because at the other side of the coin, we are entering a new phase when it comes to Iran's interaction with the world in terms of the shift that is happening. But my final question has to be on sanctions also to you, Fuadizade, because as you said, we won't call them riots, the vigilantes and U.S.'s association with that, Robert Malley has said, our focus is on the vigilant, or the, he doesn't call them vigilantes, but we'll call them that. Our focus is on the vigilantes, on what's on what's happening inside of Iran. But when he says that, isn't that then consequential? Because people are not getting life-saving medicines. The sanctions are actually making life harder for that sector that needs that. So isn't that something that the U.S. needs to consider, even though they have said medicine is exempt from sanctions?
Yes, they are exempt from sanctions, but because of banking sanctions, Iran cannot pay for the medicine that the country needs. And in effect, you will have sanctions on medicine. That's what happens in practice. You know, we need to remember that the problem that exists with regard to U.S. returning to JCPOA is the difficulties that the Biden administration has with the U.S. Congress. You have all the Republicans that are opposed to the nuclear agreement, with the exception of one, maybe. And then you have very powerful Democrats like Robert Menendez or Chuck Schumer, people who are leading Democrats in the Senate, that are also opposed. Robert Menendez has said this very clearly for months. And that's the difficulty that the U.S. has. But okay, instead of acknowledging that, they are using other terminologies that are not really helpful.
Thank you very much, Fuadizade, professor at the University of Tehran. Yusuf Aziz, a pleasure, international affairs expert from Washington, D.C. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Takwe and the team, it's goodbye.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, I'm Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're going to be with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll try to discuss the commentary of chapter Shu'ara, the 26th chapter of the Holy Quran. We'll be back after you listen to the verses we're going to discuss in this episode.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم فافتح بيني وبينهم فتحا ونجني ومن معي من المؤمنين
Then judge between me and them with decisive judgment and save me and those with me of the believers.
فأنجيناه ومن معه في الفلك المشحون
So we saved him and those with him in the laden ship.
ثم أغرقنا بعد الباقين
Then we drowned thereafter the remaining ones.
Dear listeners, as you were with us, we have reached the 119th verse of chapter Shu'ara. The verse reads, فَأَنْجَيْنَاهُ وَمَنْ مَعَهُ فِي الْفُلْكِ الْمَشْحُونَ So we delivered him and those with him in the laden ark. ثُمَّ أَغْرَقْنَا بَعْدُ الْبَاقِينَ Then we drowned the rest afterwards. Now this verse comes after when Prophet Nuh said to Allah, رَبِّ إِنَّ قَوْمِي كَذَّبُونَ My Lord, verily my people have belied me, they have rejected me. فَافْتَحْ بَيْنِي وَبَيْنَهُمْ فَتْحًا وَنَجِّنِي وَمَنْ مَعِي مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ Judge you then between me and them, and deliver me and the believers that are with me. So he supplicates to God, asking him, bringing him the request of being delivered from those obstinate and unbelievers, actually. Now, as we see in this verse, the Holy Quran explicitly says, فَأَنْجَيْنَاهُ وَمَنْ مَعَهُ فِي الْفُلْكِ الْمَشْحُونَ So we delivered him and those with him in the laden ark. So what we understand here, putting these a couple of verses together, is that the invocation of the prophets and that of the oppressed, specifically, are accepted. They supplicate to God and the Almighty Allah responds to them. So this is the story of the deliverance of Noah and his followers. While their opponents and disbelievers were drowned, And this is an example for Allah's way of treatment due to the helping of the right and defeating of the wrong. Now, الفلك المشحون, as the verse says, the objective of this Quranic phrase is that Noah puts whatever was needed in the ark. That is why Imam Baqir alayhi salam says, الفلك المشحون is an equipped ship which is ready to start. And also Imam Ali alayhi salam says that when Prophet Noah was ordered to board the ship, there were 90 places built in that ship for the animals. This is Noah's ark. However, the grace of Allah came to help Noah, and on the other hand, his painful punishment came to annihilate the rejectors. That is why the next verse says, ثُمَّ أَغْرَقْنَا بَعْدُ الْبَاقِينَ Then we drown the rest afterwards.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
approach. We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly, the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Oh,
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
So, this is what happens after Prophet Noah and his followers are delivered. First, we understand that the invocation of the prophets and the oppressed people are accepted by the Almighty Allah. And the second point is that the true mu'min, the believers, are safe by the invocation of their prophets. فَأَنْجَيْنَاهُ وَمَنْ مَعَهُ. The Qur'an has intentionally mentioned وَمَنْ مَعَهُ, his true followers. The Qur'an could have possibly said فَأَنْجَيْنَاهُمْ فِي الْفُلْكِ الْمَشْهُونَ, but وَمَنْ مَعَهُ means you have to be with your prophet in order to be delivered by Almighty Allah. And this is what we understand, because ثُمَّ أَغْرَقْنَا بَعْدُ الْبَاقِينَ, being diverted from the way of the prophets, has this kind of result, being destroyed. ثُمَّ أَغْرَقْنَا بَعْدُ الْبَاقِينَ, then we drowned the rest afterwards. Dear listeners, I assume there is one thing remaining about the previous verse before we move on into the next, is the word mashhoon itself. We said that al-fulk al-mashhoon is referring to Noah's ark, but the Arabic word mashhoon, what does it mean? This word is derived from shahn, which means to fill, and sometimes it has been used in the sense of equipping. The Arabic word shahna is used for the means and tools which fill all parts of a person. And the purpose here is that the ark was full of individuals and all means so that there was not any deficiency. That is, when the ark was completely ready to move, Allah sent the flood and there was no weariness for Noah and those who embarked the ark with him. This was one of the favors of the Almighty Allah over them. Thank you for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the seas. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Goodbye. When faith begins.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Family members of the victims of the Itaewon tragedy and thousands of their supporters remembered those 158 mostly young people whose lives were taken in a crowd crush October 29th. Some read letters to their lost loved ones.
Last year, we made a whole bunch of snow ducks all around outside our apartment. Please come and see me in my dreams sometimes. Please come see me someday, maybe even as my future child. I love you forever, Seon.
Although tens of thousands were gathered, police did not manage the crowds and ignored emergency calls hours before the deadly crush. Among those who perished in the tragedy, 26 of them were foreigners. Five of those were Iranian. And like many of the young people who died that evening, they were students who visited South Korea to get more experience in the world and primarily more education to better themselves. Victims' families want the truth and those responsible brought to justice. A class action lawsuit is suing the government, which has often deflected responsibility and blamed the victims. It reminds some of the ferry sinking in 2014, in which more than 300 people died.
The law should be a law to punish wrong people, but the government is humiliating, insulting, and degrading the victims and the families of the deceased. In the end, I think this happened because the Sewol ferry accident was not properly resolved.
Tonight marked the 49th day since the tragedy, signifying the end of the mourning period, when the spirit of those dead to be reborn reaches Buddha and bliss. Frank Smith, Seoul.
It's a daybreak. Raju Yadav is piling up his stock for the delivery in the retail market. He's delighted, saying markets are picking good pace and prices in the whole markets are not fluctuating since last quarter. Earlier, I would buy limited stock, he says. But since the prices are consistent and demand is satisfactory, I have bought more stock than usual. I'm testing my luck, he says. Many Indians like Raju are optimistic as the country is picking up pace as the fast-growing major economy.
We are not strictly a very heavily exporting nation. Most of our producers actually rely on our domestic market. But exports are important for us because we do import some very critical commodities.
Experts say with COVID outbreak shaking major economies, India maintained its consistency in almost all sectors except the manufacturing and employment, which they say is like a diesel engine and needs a major boost. Many economic experts say investments are flowing smoothly in the world's second most populous nation, adding the country needs to revitalize its manufacturing sector, job creation, and address bottlenecks in power, mining, and infrastructure.
More than the economy, I would say our problem, what the manufacturing sector can boost is good jobs, you know, which all Indians will agree are lacking in India. I mean, that's why so many of us go abroad, right? Because these good jobs are lacking, we are wasting our talent. And the reason is that we have never seriously thought about how to make manufacturing grow.
India growth forecast is projected at 7% despite turbulent markets and war in Ukraine that shook markets. Based on Morgan Stanley and S&P Global, the country is projected to overtake Japan and Germany to become the third largest economy by 2030. Economic experts say trade tensions between the United States and China will also open up new opportunities for India as the companies are considering India for production capacity as a second option. Many, however, argue India needs double-digit growth, which would be vital for the second most populous nation, where a huge workforce and young professionals join the market every year, besides lifting millions out of poverty. While the coronavirus pandemic ravaged the world's economy, India managed to mitigate the impact of the outbreak, mainly by relying on its domestic market. But experts say the economic growth is expected to fall in the coming months as the country grapples with high inflation, rising unemployment, and a spike in oil prices, and also a threat of global economic recession. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Pro
protest through Brussels on Friday was organised by Belgium's three largest unions. They claim the country's federal government and EU authorities are failing to adequately help citizens during the current escalating cost of living crisis. Many also question how the EU is able to set aside at least €20 billion for Ukraine in 2023.
We are all against this war because it's about imperialism, it's about money. There's more behind. It's not only about Ukraine and about Russia.
Ukraine is a key point, but our people here as well. And the money is there. People have to be taxed properly, especially the 1%.
It's important to help the Ukrainians, but what about the people here in Europe and in Belgium?
The EU's energy sanctions against Russia over the war in Ukraine have backfired. Oil, gas, diesel, petrol and electricity prices are through the roof. Inflation across the Eurozone is running at 10%. However, wages are not going up.
Many people can't buy the good food. Many people can't pay for our apartment.
Landlords are taking advantage from the inflation to raise the rents.
Landlords will now have another excuse. The European Central Bank increased interest rates by a half of 1% on Thursday.
And based on the substantial upward revision to the inflation outlook, we expect to raise them further.
The national strike on Friday resulted in flight cancellations, according to Brussels Airport. There were also major disruptions to tram, bus and metro services. Union members, not just here in Belgium, but across the EU, are warning of protests throughout 2023, which will impact public services, unless their cost of living concerns are addressed. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
The people providing the nation with care, asking to be looked after by the authorities. Some of the tens of thousands of UK nurses who have walked off their jobs demanding better pay and conditions. Lakshmi has worked for the NHS for 22 years.
Shortages of nurses have led to less staff, and you can't care for people if you don't have a staff to care for. So it's person safety. Mainly, and if here comes, obviously, people are leaving profession due to, unfair pays, overworked, stressed, and shortage of staff.
Hailed as heroes during the pandemic, nurses up and down the country, Save Scotland, are staging two 12-hour strikes this week and next. Their representative body, the Royal College of Nursing, says they had no choice when the government rejected calls for talks on NHS pay. The RCN says nurses are 20% worse off in real terms today than they were in 2010 due to successive below-inflation pay rewards.
Things have gotten so bad that hospitals, one in four hospitals, are having to set up food banks for nurses and for other staff. This is unprecedented. But we're not just fighting for pay, we're fighting for the survival of the NHS.
One reason for that concern is the number of staff leaving the profession. 25,000 nursing staff have quit the NHS in the past year. The government says the demand for a 19% pay rise is not affordable. The unions argue the money is there. The nurses' strike is part of a wave of industrial action sweeping the UK this year, with the strikers demanding better pay and conditions as a worsening cost of living crisis pushes more and more people into dire straits.
The unions are warning that the strikes this month could be the beginning of a longer period of action if governments refuse formal pay negotiations or if future talks do not result in satisfactory outcomes. Saeed Purizap, London.
The Saudi-led coalition has once again detained two fuel ships, preventing them from reaching the crucial western port of Hodeidah. The Yemeni Petroleum Company says the two fuel vessels were detained despite obtaining the necessary permits and being cleared from inspection in the port of Djibouti.
Preventing fuel ships from entering Yemen continues to take its toll on the country's battered economy. It has led to an increase in food prices and basic supplies and has made life harder for the Yemeni people as Saudi Arabia continues its blockade.
Rashid Al-Haddad, an economic expert, says The seizure of the fuel ships is just one of many war tactics employed by the Saudi-led coalition to put pressure on the Yemeni people.
The Saudi aggression is always exerting effort to make life difficult for all Yemenis by depriving them of fuel resources. 70% of fuel enters the country through the port of Hodeidah, which affects 22 million people. The Saudi-led coalition is using this as a war tactic, not against Ansarullah, but against the Yemeni people as a collective punishment.
Considering the expected rise in shipping prices, Dalal, a local fruit merchant, says he will be forced to raise his prices if no fuel enters the country.
This watermelon is normally sold for 1,500 Yemeni riyals when fuel is available. However, whenever they prevent fuel from entering Yemen, the price of this watermelon increases from 1,500 to 3,000 Yemeni riyals.
This blockade has caused an economic crisis. The price of wheat and fuel have increased. We don't have anything and we're not even being paid salaries. We're besieged from all aspects of life.
The Yemeni government says the illegal seizure of Yemeni oil is an act of war and a violation of Yemen's sovereignty, which will be met with force if continued. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
As they came together for a summit in Brussels, EU leaders were acutely aware that energy storage tanks will run dry in the coming months. There are still major divisions in the EU over a gas price cap and a proposal to buy energy from international suppliers as one single customer.
It is important that we do not outbid each other as member states, but that we use the market power to purchase gas.
It's thought a deal might be finalised on Monday. There are plenty of other divisions within the 27-nation EU. Austria is blocking Romania and Bulgaria from the border-free Schengen area. Meanwhile, funding for Hungary is being withheld over rule of law issues.
Russia is blackmailing us every day. But if we start to blackmail each other, this is not good. And this is absolutely not good for European Union.
A dark shadow of corruption is hanging over the EU. It emerged last Friday that Qatar has been bribing politicians and officials.
This scandal is a very serious matter indeed, which can shake trust in democracy and the parliamentary system. Thus, it is good that the Belgian authorities are thoroughly investigating.
At their summit, EU leaders refused to be drawn on the question of possible sanctions against Qatar. However, they signed off on more sanctions against Russia and also Iran. The leaders agreed to provide at least 20 billion euro to Ukraine in 2023. Campaigners say they should be doing more for their own citizens.
So many people in poverty, like everything what's going on from the crisis from 2008 until now, nothing changed.
It's clear that things could soon get a lot worse if the EU fails to secure a reliable long-term energy source at the right price. The costly Ukrainian refugee crisis is also growing by the day. So the final EU leader summit of 2022 has now concluded. Analysts say the unprecedented challenges they will face in 2023 could stretch the EU project beyond breaking point. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
While the West is expanding sanctions against Moscow and Tehran over their military cooperation, the potential for developing relations between the two countries is huge, since Russia and Iran are under tough Western sanctions and therefore have little to fear.
The will of our governments is interconnected. Our high-ranking officials and our peoples do not pay attention to the shouts of the entire West and continue to strengthen their ties and interaction.
At the press conference held in Moscow, Iran's ambassador to Russia summed up the outcome of relations between Moscow and Iran in 2022. He noted that Russia's ruble is used in more than 40% of trade between the two countries and that the Russian currency may become the main one in bilateral trade. According to his remarks, Tehran supported the idea of using the ruble as the main currency in regional unions such as the EAEU. He also referred to efforts to integrate the national payment systems MIR and Shetab as part of financial and economic cooperation between Russia and Iran. According to the Iranian envoy, Russia and Iran are seeking to reduce reduce the dominance of certain currencies, including the dollar, in bilateral trade and economic relations. Jalali further said the automotive industry and space sector have become another field of cooperation between the two countries. In August, Russia launched remote sensing satellite Hayam into orbit on behalf of Iran.
As for our negotiations, I want to say that negotiations between our respective organizations in the field of outer space are ongoing on a regular basis.
Iran is investigating the possibility of producing cars jointly with Russia. Two leading automakers of the Islamic Republic, Saipan and Iran Hadro, took part in last summer's exhibition in Moscow and held negotiations with the Russian side. In addition to the joint production, the two countries are also discussing the possibility of sending Iranian cars to Russia. Russian and Iranian officials have time and again said that the two countries are determined to further expand bilateral cooperation. They have expressed confidence that the aim will materialize despite all the challenges the two nations might face, given the numerous capacities the two sides have. Марина Картунова, Moscow.
In a mass rally and under a sea of green flags, men and women from all walks of life came out to take part in Hamas's 35th anniversary celebration. Hamas, who was founded in 1987, won the Palestinian parliamentary elections in January 2006, but remains blacklisted by the European Union and the United States for refusing to recognize the Israeli regime. The movement has fought several wars against the Israeli regime since 2007. The resistance movement said that Al-Quds is at the center of the Palestinian struggle for freedom.
Hamas asserts today that Al-Quds is at the core of our struggle against the Israeli occupation. We're also sending a message of Palestinian unity. As we mark this day, we want to thank all Muslims and Arabs who support the Palestinian people, especially the Axis of Resistance.
People from all walks of life attending the rally called on all Palestinian factions to increase the resistance against the Israeli occupation to bring about the liberation of Al-Quds.
We will continue to support Hamas and the resistance until we liberate every inch of our land. We call on the Muslim nation to support Palestine and to support Al-Quds. People came out today to send a strong message of support to the resistance against the Israeli occupation.
Hamas supporters said they want the Israelis to know that the Islamic Resistance movement is a force to be reckoned with.
We are here today to express our support to Hamas on its anniversary and to tell the whole world that Palestinians are supporting the resistance. Hamas has a very strong military wing that continues to grow. Hamas, along with all the resistance factions, will continue to fight for the sake of Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
35 years on, Hamas continues to garner support due to its adherence to armed resistance against the Israeli regime.
People here say that despite years of siege and multiple wars, Hamas movement has managed to defy all odds and survive all attempts to weaken it. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
The implementation of a comprehensive strategic partnership between China and Iran is getting a kickstart as a high-ranking delegation headed by the Chinese Vice Premier Hu Chunhua meets with Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi in Tehran. After his meeting with the Iranian president, the Chinese top official met with Iran's finance minister, where the two sides signed 16 MOUs to boost cooperation in different fields. Oil and gas, banking, investment, and strategic projects are the four fields of economic cooperation that are now on top of the agenda. There has already been a roughly 20% increase in trade, and the outlook for 2023 is even higher, according to Iran's finance minister. China is still Iran's biggest oil client, despite Washington's bid to bring Tehran's exports down to zero. And its close involvement in the built-out of Iran's manufacturing infrastructure is seen entirely in line with its Belt and Road Initiative. Analysts say this could represent a shift in the global balance of the oil and gas sector and create new markets where no U.S. dollars are involved.
Iran-China relations date back to the ancient Silk Road. Both countries have always had close ties, but over the past couple of years, their relations have become even more significant, with the U.S. putting pressure on China on the one hand and placing sanctions on Iran on the other. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you dear listeners of iRib English Radio Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. Stay tuned. In the Holy Quran, Surah An-Nisa, Ayah 32, we read, "Do not covet the advantage which Allah has given some of you over others. To men belongs a share of what they have earned, and to women a share of what they have earned. And ask Allah for His bounty. Indeed, Allah has knowledge of all things."
لذا اینقدر آیات قرآن داریم زنها رو تو مسیر خدای نکرده عدم نجابت نندازید.
In the Holy Quran, we have many ayahs that invite the women to chastity and modesty. Unfortunately, there are some men who act against the text of the Quran and ask their wives to be present in the society without proper hijab or chaste clothing. Once, a man saw a couple who were passing in the street. The wife was without hijab and put on many cosmetics. The man went to the husband and asked him for permission to look at his beautiful wife. The husband got angry and called him crazy. The man said, "Why do you call me crazy? All the other stranger men are looking at your wife without taking permission. However, I asked for your permission. So what is wrong with that?" The husband became quiet and left the area with his wife. This shows that many men and women are pure in their nature, but they are trapped in satanic temptations.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Olamaz Speech, which was the